Welcome to Fearless Dentistry, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of dentistry with your fearless host, Dr. John Gordon. Dr. Gordon will fearlessly guide you through the evolving landscape of dentistry. Get ready to embrace the fearless mindset and revolutionize your dentistry practice. This is Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon.
Okay, welcome to this episode of the Fearless Dentistry Podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. John Gordon. And I'm excited to have with me today as a guest, Dr. Eric Block, DMD. Eric has quite a background and a lot of information to share with us here today. And as you folks know in the audience, this podcast is designed to challenge your thinking and challenge your entrepreneurial spirit to look at where you are, look at your practice, and see how much better you can become. Look at what's holding you back. And don't fear those things, but fearlessly engage anything relentlessly and go for it. And I think that's what Eric has done. I've done research on Eric and looking way back from the start of his practice to where he is today. He has fearlessly engaged obstacles that have been presented to him and that have snuck up on him. And you've just fearlessly looked down that channel at those obstacles, Eric. And, you know, when we talked last week, I thought, you know, this is just an awesome person with a great story. And there's a lot of lessons for you out there, the audience, for you to take note of and apply to your own dental practice and your own thinking. And so, Eric, welcome to the show today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. You know, you're an author, and you're an author just not of one book, but of three books. And it's the Stress-Free Dentist, the Stress-Free Implant, and the Stress-Free Entrepreneur. What brought about those books?
Well, the first book was really just me sharing my story of how I overcame burnout and anxiety and stress from the dental profession. And that's not something that happened overnight. I was in a very kind of dark period where I really thought about leaving dentistry. And I was so worried about getting sued and a bad review and just full of anxiety and burned out and really regretted my decision to become a dentist. And I said, you know, there's no way you can do this for the next 30 years. You have to do something. So I picked up the phone and I called a local therapist and I started going through therapy. And I really just figured out what made me tick and why I was so anxious. And I was able to overcome it. And it was something that I felt like I could help other dentists. And I wanted to share my story and tell other dentists that I was there and I overcame burnout and you can do it too. So that's where the Stress-Free Dentist came from. The second book is called Stress-Free Dental Implants. And that's was just really all about my journey with dental implants. I've been placing and restoring implants for 20 years. And they, at first, were one of the most stressful procedures I did all day. And that was because I was placing freehand and I was planning on 2D technology. And then I started to add guided surgery and 3D planning. And they became one of the least stressful procedures I did all day, one of the most enjoyable procedures. So that was really just me kind of sharing about my history. And you can interchange the word dental implant for any, you know, new treatment modality. It's really just getting educated, staying in your comfort zone, strategically doing it and making it happen. The third book was called The Stress-Free Entrepreneur. And that is a very oxymoronic title because, you know, just like in dentistry, there's always going to be stress. There's no such thing as a stress-free dentist or stress-free entrepreneur. But the important thing is that you understand this. You understand you're going to have tremendous amounts of stress. You're going to have sleepless nights. You're going to have anxiety, but to not let it break you and to always keep pushing. You win some, you learn some, you lose some, but you just got to keep pushing forward. In the entrepreneurial world, it's all about overcoming failures and mistakes and pivoting and adjusting. And first and foremost is telling yourself, you can do this. And that's where most of where my books came from.
You know, each one of those books, Eric, the Stress-Free Dentist, Implants, and Entrepreneur, like you said, they're just so connected with each other. the concerns and whatever are just so tightly stitched together. You know, you talked about burnout, stress, and anxiety. And I don't think that there's a dentist out there that does not get wrapped up in each one of those all day to a different degree. And it's kind of like it creeps up on us. It's kind of like the frog in the boiling water. You know, you throw the frog in hot boiling water, boom, it's over instantly. But if you put him in the water and slowly turn up the heat, you don't recognize what's happening. And that's what I think happens with the stress and the anxiety and the possibility of burnout, is that this just progressively happens over time. And we don't realize it's occurring until one day it becomes overwhelming. And it's like, how did we get here? It's like any kind of a disease or illness, is that, you know, that disease or illness has been building for years normally. And then all of a sudden, when the symptoms get bad enough, we have a critical moment. We have a crisis. I do believe, you know, we have a common friend, Laura Brenner, and she went through the same process. The difference being is that she retired from dentistry as a result of it and looked for another venue of helping dentists with that. And you've made it. Tell me a little bit more about that particular scenario.
Yeah, to tell you the truth, I thought there was something wrong with me. You know, I would wait until, you know, 5 o'clock so I could go home. I couldn't wait until the weekend so I could decompress from the week. I couldn't wait until lunch so I could go home for an hour. And for sure, I couldn't wait until I retired so I wouldn't have to, you know, do dentistry anymore. And I said, you know, that's no way to live. And I ended up, you know, picking up the phone, going through therapy. I've been through life coaching before. And it was all up here. It was all in my head. It was me putting too much pressure on myself. I was trying to be perfect. And a lot of times that's, you know, what they train us in dental school. They train us to get that perfect margin, pass your boards. And in the real world, that's not realistic. You know, the only perfect dentist is the one that hasn't gone to dental school yet. The only dentist without stress is the one that's retired. It's no way to practice and live if you're unhappy. You only get one life. And I really just dug in deep to what made me tick. I'm more introverted. So the social aspect of the profession was really draining on me. You know, you have a patient in your chair and you have to give them this great patient experience. And then you got to jump into the next room and give that hygiene patient a great exam and a great experience. And then, you know, we have 5 hygienists. So I was, you know, bouncing around from room to room. And by the end of the day, I was exhausted. And, you know, for me, I'm more introverted. So I decompress by not talking and just kind of shutting things down. But I realized, you know, with, you know, what I was going through, that there's nothing wrong with me. It's just the way I'm wired. And I started to not put too much pressure on myself. I started to say no to some patients and kind of stay within my own personal comfort zone. And I felt like when I did that, I was saying yes to myself. I used to, you know, when I was a young dentist, want to treat everyone and treat everything. And sometimes that's, you know, can get you into trouble and get you into a stressful situation. So there was many things that I did, but most of all, you know, most important thing that I did was I took some action. And, you know, like you said, with that, I was that frog and I was, you know, that water was, you know, getting boiling hot. And I wished I had reached out for help much, much earlier, but it's, you know, better late than never.
Yeah. You know, you said a number of things there that I want to circle back around to. You know, you sought therapy and you realized you were at a point where you needed outside help. I think what's difficult for people in the medical profession or anybody who is somewhat of an influential individual within the public is for us to self-admit that we don't have all the answers and we need help. And going to therapy and reaching out, we let society's perception of who we are or who we need to be interfere with our judgment and doing the right thing for ourselves, because we may be perceived as weak. And I don't look at it that way at all. I look at it as strength. Having the courage and the strength to look what's going on in your life and be very honest about it and going, wow, I do need some help. Dentistry is stressful, as you mentioned. It is just stressful. I'm like you, Eric. I'm an introvert. you'd never guess it. I mean, here I am. We're on this podcast and we're talking and we're sharing things. But I'm like you. Take me to a party or a gathering or a lot of the CE courses. You know, I'd go up, sit down, I'd pull out my notebook and pen, and that was kind of my signal, like, don't bother me. I'd take my notes. CE would be over. I may go up and visit with the lecturer. I may not. And then I'd exit the room, leave me alone. So when I went into my office, my patients and my staff needed the different John. They needed the leader. And so I had to really kind of poise myself, let my inner voice tell myself, John, you got to rise to the occasion to lead because these people need you. And at the end of the day, I was emotionally, mentally exhausted. And that created physical exhaustion. And I'd get home and my wife would get the crumbs. And fortunately, I have a very precious wife and she was very understanding. And she realized that the crumbs were okay at that point. But kudos for you of taking that step and going out and getting therapy.
Yeah, you actually said something right there where you had to, you know, kind of give a different John and be that leader. You know, I was very overwhelmed and I still struggle with this on a daily basis, is being a leader. And, you know, as dentists, when you become a practice owner, if that's the route you go in, you all of a sudden are a leader, a CEO of a business, and we had absolutely no training in this. And it's very important for you to not put too much pressure on yourself and to understand that you don't have all the answers. And that's okay. It's okay to not know. And it's okay to tell your staff that you're not sure about something. And they will appreciate your honesty and vulnerability. But it's a very, like John, like what you were saying, it's a very common situation where dentists are all of a sudden thrusted in this leadership position where they had absolutely no training in.
You know, the leadership issue, I think, Eric, is one of the bigger pieces of the pie that is so overlooked. Because like you said, immediately when we open the practice, the expectations that you start developing your staff and the expectations of the staff is that you've got your act together and you are a good leader. Just by the fact of us hiring them, they put us into that category. And when those patients come in, they automatically assume that we have great communication skills and we have great listening skills. And we have all these things that are what they need from their dentist or their doctor to lead them down the road with which they want to travel. And we don't have any of that, really. Our conversations in the past have not been one of direct depth to them, like our patients need and want from us. And I felt like that was the biggest challenge for me in moving forward, particularly when I decided to make my practice a lifestyle dental practice where I did a lot of cosmetic implant restorative and that type of thing. I knew that those patients needed something different from me. I wasn't quite sure exactly what they needed from me yet and or how I was going to learn to gather those skills. And over time, unfortunately, a little failure here and there, a little few embarrassing moments in front of the patients, you start realizing, but still, it looks like a extremely steep mountain to climb with extreme physical and mental and emotional difficulty, but we've got to do it.
Yeah, it's a, you know, dentistry is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And especially when you become a practice owner, you got to take your time with it. I really wish I had, you know, instead of taking all those implant and bone grafting courses or, you know, veneer courses, I had taken more leadership courses and practice management courses. That was something I would go back and change.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I went through the Pinky Institute. I went through the Dawson Institute. I did this and did that. And, you know, I went through some other high powered organizations and I felt like I had the technical skills, but I didn't have the communication skills to sell the case. I didn't have the communication skills to develop a relationship with the patient to where they felt like I was going to be honest and I was a trustworthy individual. It was later on when, you know, you stumble and you fumble enough and you see the back of heads walking out more than you see a smiley face coming in, that you realize I've got to do something different. And I know that one thing I started advocating after a while, and this kind of went against a little bit of the grain of some of the people at the Pankey Institute and the Dawson Institute, is that I told them to, my suggestion was to put the articulators up, put the x-rays up, and learn to communicate first. Ask great questions of the patient. Listen to their answers, because normally their answers are going to be great questions, great answers, and they're going to open the door into the soul of that person. And that's where the real story is. And once you learn the real story, it's wide open for you.
Yeah, I get in the habit of documenting conversations that I've had with patients and writing down some important things that are happening in their lives. So I bring it up at the next visit when I see them, and they are wowed that they think I remembered it. But meanwhile, it's written down in the notes.
Yeah.
Or, you know, got a dog, or they just had a grandbaby, or whatever it is. Yeah. But to make that connection with the patient, and you know, it could be anything. You know, I had a patient in the other day, and our connection was we did yoga, and we talked about that for about 15 minutes. And I really also found that the more open I was with patients, the better connection I made. You know, as a young dentist, I was, you know, I walked in and I was the dentist, and I kept this big barrier up. And I think there's, you know, still there's boundaries that need to be set, but I didn't let them into anything beyond the dental office in my world. I have totally changed that. And I tell them all about, you know, my kids and, you know, what I'm doing, what I'm up to. And it really just makes for a better connection with the patient. And they get to know me, they get to like me, they get to trust me. And it really snowballs for them to refer their friends and family.
Yeah. One thing there, Eric, that I thought of when you were speaking, when we become more vulnerable with our patients, they sense that. You know, we are very perceptive people. We're very perceptive organisms on this planet, that we do sense other people's personality. We do sense where they're at with things. We do sense where they're at with us. And so without having to say much, they can pick up so much about us. And that's where, you know, learning to be present with people, not just physically present, but being present with them. They pick up on those things so quickly. And when they do that, again, the conversation changes, the relationship changes. I could tell almost to the second when I was meeting a new patient and they were coming in for some major restorative work. I could tell almost to the second to when they would take a little bit of a sigh, relax their shoulders, their facial expressions would change. And I knew that we had made a connection, and we really didn't need to say very much. It's because the biggest factor I felt, Eric, at that point in my ability to relate with people was being vulnerable with them. And that opened up a whole different category. I listened to a lady not long ago. I wish I could remember her name. It may have been Renee Brown, one of her TED Talks about vulnerability. And she interviewed the Marines and special team forces and whatever. And she talked to them about vulnerability. And, you know, these are the toughest guys in the world. I mean, they put their lives on the line. I mean, they are just on the battlefield. They are just badass dudes. There's no way around it. And she asked them, do you ever think that you go into a mission that is extremely daring and dangerous and tough without being vulnerable? None of them could ever answer no, because they knew they had to be vulnerable within the team to each other, and to be vulnerable then made it to where they could trust and rely upon each other. And I thought that was interesting, because again, vulnerability is one of those words that may be perceived as weakness, but it's not. It's strength. It's courage. I thought that was a really interesting concept by her.
Oh, yeah. I think, and that goes as far as, you know, with your patients, your staff, when you start to let people in. And again, you know, it's important to keep some barriers, but when you start to let people in and let them know that you're not perfect, you have mistakes, you have failures, you have issues going on, it really creates a great connection. One other thing for any young dentist listening out there is don't rush. You know, if you're rushing through that, especially that new patient exam, they're going to sense that. You know, take your time, set enough time, especially with new patients, let them talk. They're probably there because maybe they left their previous office because they didn't have a good connection with that other, you know, that previous dentist. And also I speak in lay terms. I don't speak in dental jargon. I speak so that, you know, as if I was explaining a procedure to my 8-year-old son so that patients can feel comfortable, they can ask questions, and they understand everything.
Yeah, I think those are two great points. When you're starting a practice or you're really young into your career, maybe you're an associate or whatever, I feel that they want to rush the process. In fact, I know they do. I had an associate and they wanted to rush the process. They were forcing issues that didn't need to be forced. And I heard a phrase, slow down to speed up. And when I first heard that, I go, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. But you're shaking your head. Yes, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Is that slow down, communicate with people, listen to them. They are more likely to say yes to major work. Therefore, you can see 2 to 3 patients maximum today per day. Maybe sometimes it's 1. And so you really get to kind of formulate and build your practice the way you want by slowing down and listening. You know, what I found interesting, Eric, with my patients is that the quicker that I tuned into them, which was I almost made it immediately, I made it all about them, the quicker they responded. And it's like, okay, speed up a little bit or slow down at first with my communication, let them engage on their terms, and then we get the prize at the end, and that's working together with the people. And use lay terms. Yeah, when you're speaking to a horse, you speak horse, you know. Youngsters, again, they want to rush and use those technical terms. And I think I remember way back, you know, you want to impress your patients. Now, the way you impress patients, using lay terms so that they can understand what's going on. Talk a little bit about your podcast, Eric.
Yeah, so the podcast is based off of just having great conversations with people in the industry like yourself. And just, I love hearing people's stories. It's called the Deals for Dentists podcast, which started during COVID when my practice was shut down like many other offices were. You know, I said, I'm not just going to sit here and eat my kids' leftover dino nuggets and do nothing. I'm going to do something. And I started a website called Deals for Dentists, which is a marketplace that connects dentists to vendors and shows vendors new customer offers. And I was having so many great conversations. I said, you know what, this could be a podcast. And I just started interviewing vendors and dentists and hearing their stories, how they got involved in dentistry and how they can help other dentists. And that's really the basis behind the podcast.
Yeah. I looked up your podcast and I actually listened to the last one here, not all the way through yet, about the, 10 marketing mistakes, or was it 5 or 10?
It was 5, yeah, marketing mistakes.
5, yeah, yeah. What I found was interesting, let's see, a week ago or so, I listened to a podcast with a gentleman, Dr. Lin Tao, had Steve Anderson on. They were talking about fee-for-service dentistry. And your latest episode on your podcast was the 5 most common mistakes, marketing mistakes by dentists. And I was very surprised about what he considered the very first marketing mistake. Now, I know that it's a marketing mistake, and I know it costs dentists a lot per year. But here's what he said. What was the gentleman's name, Eric?
That was an interview with Naren Arulraja, and he's the CEO of Equa Marketing. He's a brilliant guy that has really helped me in my office with website and organic SEO.
Yeah. what we'll do is we'll include a link to his marketing company here on the podcast notes. But what he shared, and I'm glad you said his name because I wasn't going to be able to say and repeat that, kind of a tongue twister. What he shared is if you have a doctor that is collections are right at $1 million and they are signed up with a number of PPO insurance companies, and he said approximately 75% of their practice is PPO, that the write-offs per year approach $600,000. I would not have guessed that. When I heard that, Eric, I paused your podcast a moment, and I go back and I took my fees. I was not a PPO, or I was a fee for service, but I went back and I kind of went through my fees and did the math, and he's not too far off. That's an amazing number.
It is. It really is. And when you consider, you know, how many dentists out there don't know what their PPO write-offs are, but I really consider it a marketing expense. You know, PPO write-offs, you're getting patients in the door because you've signed an in-network contract with an insurance company to get a volume of patients. It's essentially a very expensive marketing expense.
It is. You know, the PPOs create a tremendous amount of pressure on the dentist. So when they come out of school or they're starting to practice, let's say they have their dental school debt, and then they're opening a practice or they're going into an associateship, which, you know, associateships, they're not paid that much. And a lot of them are going into DSOs. You know, when they do that, there's a tremendous amount of financial pressure on them, which can segue into all aspects of their life. So it's one of those things. I remember when I was in dental school, our senior year, we had Delta Dental come in and make presentations to us. We had some of the other major insurance companies come in and make presentations to us. And it's kind of like, wow, this is awesome. You know, we go in and they're going to help feed us patients and, you know, we're going to get this income and whatever. And I didn't do it, and I'm glad I didn't, but it's, they make it so attractive. And these youngsters, they really don't understand the impact of what they're signing up for. And once you get into that cycle, it's a vicious cycle and it's hard to get out of. But here's the thing that Steve Anderson said that surprised me. He's helped many, many, many practices evolve out of the PPO practice scenario into fee for service. And he talked about the 80-20 principle. He says, what they found is that you will lose 20% of your patients and retain 80% on an average. And again, I found that interesting because my guess would be it would be a larger loss than that. But I was really pleased to hear that statistic. And, you know, when you put your numbers to that, the fewer PPO people you see and your more fee for service, you know, your revenues go up, your profit goes up, pressure is decreased, I would think, significantly for these people in moving forward. Share with me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, and I think that that especially works when you are a relationship-driven practice, meaning you have a good relationship with patients, you've connected with them, they know, like, and trust you. If you're just a high volume, and there's nothing wrong with that, if you have a high volume type of practice, and it's different, you may lose more patients if that's the case. But if your patients get to know you, like you, trust you, and you've built that connection with them, they don't want to go anywhere else. You know, some are going to leave, but most won't. And if you control the narrative and you have that conversation up front and have it multiple times, because, you know, sometimes you tell them that you can still come here. We'll still help you, you know, process your claims. We'll still help you use your annual maximum, but will be considered out of network. Patients will still think that they can't come to see you if you go out of network. So have that conversation multiple times You can never over communicate that. But I think most important is create that relationship with the patient so they're not going to want to leave.
I think that's a big bingo right there. You're right. The relationship basis. When patients develop a relationship with us, first of all, they feel obligated to maintain the relationship. But secondly, is they, out of the obligation, they really want to personally and emotionally keep that relationship with you. And developing a relationship basis practice is so important in a fee-for-service. And I think also moving forward into a high-quality practice also, the more that you can develop those high degree level of relationships with people, people are going to really trust you to do the work for them and help create their future that they're looking at with you. And I think with Steve, the people that probably were looking with him and working with him at trying to transition out into the fee-for-service were probably people that had a higher degree of relationship building skills, communication skills. They also probably had a little bit higher vision and dream for themselves moving forward. And I think, you know, Eric, what you're talking about, there are going to be some youngsters that all they want to do is come in and do an 8-to-5 and that's that. And that's okay because that fits who they are and what their lifestyle is. And like you said earlier in the conversation, this is who I am. And I think that's an important thing is for us to realize who we are and try not to be someone that we're not. It just is so difficult to do that. So, you know, stay within ourselves and stay within our dreams and visions and who we want to be moving forward.
That's very well said. And also to not give in to fear. You know, if you're fear and you're scared that you don't want to go out of network because you're fear that you're going to lose all your patients, try to overcome that, because don't let that fear of the unknown, you know, overtake your mind.
You know, as we all know, fear is a huge, huge driving force, and it prevents us from doing so many things that would benefit our lives and the people around us. And I read a book probably, gosh, almost 30 years ago called The Aladdin Factor. Great book. Can't remember the author's name right offhand, but he talked about fear there. And he indicated through research and study that only 2% of our fears actually come true. And out of that 2%, about 5% of our actual fear factor becomes a reality. So our driving fears are so unlikely to take place, but that 2% owns us. We let that 2% out there completely and totally dictate who we are and what we are in circumstances. That helped me. I was glad to hear that concept, but still, fear's there. It's hard to ignore it.
It is. And I feel like I lived with a lot of fear for a very long time, which, you know, it really can overtake your mind. When I started to let go of fear and trying new things, that's when I started the website, the podcast, started writing books, and it just really just opens yourself up to so many more opportunities. But, you know, the first step is to tell yourself, look, I can do this and I'm going to make this happen and I'm going to make mistakes and that's okay. But to not let in that negativity or that pessimism, I think a lot of that also has to do with the people you keep around yourself. If you're keeping people that are fear-driven, that are negative and pessimistic, they will drag you down. So you want to keep positive people around you. I overcame the fear of trying new things. And that's when I started writing books and starting the podcast and starting a website and writing articles and blogs, things that I'd never thought I could do. But a major part of that was keeping positive people around me. Not keeping negative people or pessimistic people around you is so important.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing in our first conversation and then also looking at your profile on LinkedIn is how you immersed yourself into the things that you knew that would help you and support you in what you wanted to become and who you and where you wanted to take your practice. You know, writing 3 books, developing this website for Deals for Dentists, you know, the podcast. Kudos to you for taking control instead of letting the stress and the anxiety and burnout control you. And here you are, as you said, you actually enjoy going to the office daily. Good for you, Eric.
Yeah. And like I said, I wish I had reached out for help sooner. You know, like we tell patients, you know, take care of that cavity early, because if you don't, it's going to turn into a big filling, or that big filling will turn into a crown, or it'll crack, or it'll turn into a root canal. You know, follow yourself. What you tell your patients is to take care of things early. And, you know, the earlier in your career, if you can reach out for whether it's a coach, a mentor, a consultant, a therapist, a peer, you know, engage with your peers, you know, whatever it takes, you know, to not go into this, you know, profession alone is so important. And don't let these problems bubble up. I think men sometimes don't relieve their thoughts. They try to push their emotions deep down, and it's like pushing a beach ball under the water. And if you keep pushing it down, it's going to eventually burst up. So the sooner in your career you reach out for help, the better.
Yeah, that's a great analogy with the beach ball. You know, we try to suppress it and hide it. And there's so much energy with it wanting to come up and be present. So sometimes it's a futile thing to go through. Share with us a little bit about your coaching.
Yeah, so my co-founder, Dr. Laura Brenner, who we've met through, we decided to create an organization called the International Academy of Dental Life Coaches, or the IADLC.com. And it's really, we wanted to spread awareness to dentists out there to seek the help of coaches and life coaches. And we created a group, a very diverse group of coaches that understand dentistry. So we want people to, A, have a place to reach out for help. You can check out the website. But also, you know, dentistry is a very complex profession. It's very hard to explain what you're going through on a day-to-day basis to someone that doesn't understand the profession. So all of our life coaches that are part of the organization that we'll match you up with understand dentistry. And I think, you know, like I've been saying all along, the earlier that you do it, the better. Don't wait for problems to become so major that, you know, we see it all the time in dentistry. People wait and they let their problems build up. It turns to depression. It turns to substance abuse, alcoholism, burnout, and sometimes even worse, suicide. So the sooner you reach out for help, the better. And, you know, at the International Academy of Dental Life Coaches, that's what we're here for. We'll match you up with a life coach to help you, whether you're struggling or whether you just want to get to that next level. You may be doing awesome, but you just want to get that 1% better, you know, that next level. And that's what we're here for.
Yeah. You know, I think there probably is some degree of shame, embarrassment with people admitting that they have a problem. But, you know, we're people first. And we experience issues just like everybody else in life. Just because we're a dentist or a doctor doesn't mean that we're immune to the human side of issues in life. And acknowledging that we have issues is one of the first steps. It's like an alcoholic or a drug addict. The first thing they'll tell you is, I don't have a problem. They're avoiding that acknowledgement, which is preventing them from getting help and changing their life. But then having a place that they know that they can be safe to share that with, and someone that will help them grow and learn and come out from underneath that black hole or that black rock that's suffocating their life. Kudos to you and Laura. As I mentioned earlier with you, I've had Laura on my podcast here a couple weeks ago, and I just think that's very courageous of both of you to put this thing together and offer this out. And it, you know, the word needs to be spread, because you know the dental community. It's, you wouldn't think it is, but it's a very close, tight knit. We know each other, and we know about each other. And boy, do we have things that, you know, all you got to do is go look at your state dental board and some of the sanctions that they've issued, and you see over and over again major problems coming about, and a lot of it stems from the stress and the pressure of dentistry, and they turn to ways, coping ways that are of no value to them and actually push them further into the black hole. So again, kudos to you guys for, first of all, coming out of and understanding your situations and growing to where you are today, but then putting a product out there that will help them grow and come out, and hopefully they can align themselves like you did, Eric, and wake up in the morning and look forward to going into the practice and making a difference in people's lives, and then look forward to going home and having a great time with their family. Good for you.
Yeah. Happy for you. Thank you so much. I have a coach, and this pains me to say, but guess who also had a coach? And he left New England to go play for Tampa Bay. Tom Brady had a throwing coach, not to get 1% better, not to get 2% better. He had a coach to get 0.1% better. So even if you're doing great, but you just want to get to that next level, you know, that's also a reason to reach out for help. You could always use that, you know, that extra little, you know, push, re-energize yourself, and, you know, learn new things, whether it's new techniques, new treatment modalities, new technology, all these things that I've added into my practice over the years. We just got a milling machine. We added a 3D printer. I've started clear aligners. I've started treating sleep and airway. Every time I add something new, and I do it strategically and slowly because I don't want to overburden the staff. I've gotten into that mess where I've tried to crowbar something new, and that never works that well. But you know, when you add something new, and it could be the smallest little thing, it re-energizes yourself and can make you look forward to going to work every day. So, you know, just try to get out of that hamster wheel of doing the same old thing every day.
The way things and the way technology is changing, there's so many things out there that are so fun. I guess you look at them as fun first, and then the reality comes in is the implication and application within the practice. And, you know, I was guilty of that myself, Eric. You know, I bring in a toy and my staff wasn't prepared. I did all the research myself and I didn't mention to them. And next thing I know, you know, we've got the new technology in the office. It's being installed and the staff's going, what, you know. It was fun though. It was fun to bring those things in because it did add energy into the practice. And the staff, you know, once they learned how to do it, you know, I'd turn it over and I'd let them have it and run with it. Gave them some ownership is what I tried to do as much as possible. But, you know, we can't do this alone, and you're right. It's important for us to bring in people around to have a good supporting team for us. And again, we don't take time to do that. And sometimes we don't think we need that, but we do constantly. We need to, you know, just reconfigure our bearings and get our feet back underneath ourselves. Is there anything else, Eric, that you feel is important for you to share with the audience?
I also wanted to just mention that, you know, my golden goose is dentistry. However, I have a lot of other things going on, and it has really helped me, whether it's, you know, writing articles or writing books, the podcast, the websites. It has really helped me with my main gig, and that's dentistry. I'm not just focused 100% of my brain on the office. For example, if a patient doesn't show up or they cancel, I'm not, you know, all devastated like I used to be. I have other things going on that I'm really passionate about. So I really get to diversify my day. And I wake up and the first thing I do is, first I take my sleep apnea device out. But then after that, I start writing, write for about an hour. And then I go to the office and I do some sun salutations and yoga. And that's before I get to the office and start seeing patients. So I feel like I've already been productive for that day. And it's, you know, not even 8 o'clock. So just, you know, to all the dental professionals out there, you know, find the things you're passionate about, and do them.
You know, that's setting your day, isn't it? You've got a routine to prepare yourself to where you come in mentally and physically sharp and ready to go, ready to give the best of who you are to everybody that you're involved with in the day. Great for you. What time do you wake up in order to accomplish that, Eric?
I was never a morning person, John. And then I had kids and I just started getting up at, you know, early. My son still gets up at 5:30 and he's 8. So I've got to be up anyway. So I might as well be productive. I'm not just turning on the TV and watching TV. I just write and start writing. And I was never a gifted writer. And I just worked at it. And it's something I really enjoy doing. And that hour just flies by. So I get up at about 5:30 and then I head to the office. We have our morning huddle at 7:40 and I start seeing my first patient around 8 o'clock.
Yeah. Good for you. Well, that's it. It just takes preparation. Get ourselves aligned, step, pause, have a great mindset, have a great narrative for your day and a great narrative about yourself. Great. Well, Eric, we'll bring this to end here. What will be the best way for people to make connection with you?
Yeah, you can search for me on Facebook, LinkedIn, thestressfreedentist.com is my website, or you can email at info@thestressfreedentist.com. Also check out the IADLC.com, which is the International Academy of Dental Life Coaches. And anyone, please, please, please feel free to reach out to me. And if anyone is going through the burnout or the struggle of dentistry, please reach out to me for help.
I appreciate that, Eric. And what we'll do is we'll put all your contact info at the end of the podcast notes so that if they didn't have their pencil and pen handy there, they can definitely get a hold of you. I appreciate your insight. I appreciate you sharing your story. That is putting yourself out there and making yourself vulnerable. And I consider it very courageous. And not knowing you very long, I'm proud of what you've accomplished and where you're at today. And I wish you the best of luck moving forward. And I hope that you and Laura with your coaching organization just keep making an impact and help create value in people's lives. So I appreciate you being here with me today.
I appreciate you having me. This was an absolutely enjoyable conversation, and hopefully it helps a lot of dentists out there.
Yeah, no doubt. If they listen to it, I think it's going to help them. That's it for this episode of the Fearless Dentistry Podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. John. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for joining us on Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon. Stay fearless, keep pushing boundaries, and continue making a lasting impact in dentistry. Subscribe for more fearless conversations. Until next time, keep spreading smiles.